Good evening and welcome to Lupin Limited Q1 FY25 earnings conference call. Please note that all participants' line will be in listen-only mode, and there will be an opportunity for you to ask questions after the opening remarks. Please note that this conference is being recorded. I now hand the conference over to the management. Thank you, and over to you.
Good afternoon, friends. I'm very pleased to welcome you to our Q1 fiscal year 25 earnings call. I have with me our MD Nilesh and our CFO Ramesh. We look forward to sharing with you our highlights for the quarter as well as outlook for the year ahead. We're very pleased to start the new fiscal year on a strong note with solid double-digit growth in revenues and margins, both on a year-on-year and quarter-on-quarter basis. EBITDA margins at 23.3% have expanded by 290 basis points quarter over quarter, driven by strong commercial execution on new product launches as well as inline products, continuous attention to operational improvements, as well as lower than anticipated R&D spend. In parallel, we have continued to improve our position on the quality and compliance front, having received positive FDA inspection outcomes for our Aurangabad, Somerset, Nagpur, and Dabhasa facilities in the last quarter. Our U.S. business had a great start with strong growth sequentially and year-over-year, driven by more stable inline business, strong contribution from respiratory products, both tiotropium as well as albuterol, and new product launches like mirabegron and doxycycline that more than offset decline in products like Suprep that have seen additional competition. As we look at the quarters ahead, with continued ramp-up of the new products that we have launched, additional new product launches like Predfort that we just received with CGT, glucagon later in the fiscal year, liposomal doxorubicin that we're in the midst of launching at present, we expect to grow our U.S. business at a high single digit in fiscal year 25. Also, our U.S. business has returned to a strong level of margins given the shift to complex generics and strong focus on driving productivity and efficiencies in the base business. Switching to India, we recorded 10.5% growth versus IPM, growth of 8.7%, which was 21% ahead of the market. Cardiac, respiratory, GI, and vitamins business in India grew well ahead of market. Our internal diabetes portfolio, the non-licensed diabetes portfolio that is, grew at two times the category growth during the quarter, so which was very heartening for us. We also successfully completed the carve-out of our trade generics business in India to 100% owned subsidiary, with the objective of achieving agility, better focus, and growth of this business going ahead. From a new product launch perspective, we have been at the forefront in terms of NPLs in India and have a healthy pipeline of around 20 products, which we plan to launch in the fiscal year. We are confident that our reach through our 10,000-plus reps, along with our portfolio enhancements, will enable us to grow around 20%-30% higher than the market in the year ahead, as we have guided in our earlier interactions. Switching to other markets, our other developed markets grew a strong double digit, driven by Canada due to Zaxine, our brand business there, and new product launches like Spiriva and Etanercept, UK due to Luforbec, and new product launches in Germany and Australia. Other emerging markets also grew double digits, driven by Mexico, Philippines, and South Africa. On the R&D front, while Q1 has been light, we expect our spend to ramp up in Q2 and Q3 with the progress that we have in our pipeline. We expect R&D to be around 1,800 crores for fiscal year 25, with an increasing percentage of complex generics as we have planned over the last couple of years. We look forward to a very solid fiscal year 25 ahead with the momentum we have built in all our regions, the new product pipeline engine delivering at a high gear, and continued focus on the fundamentals from an efficiency and compliance standpoint. Our strategic growth drivers provide us with a clear line of sight to growth beyond the current fiscal year, both in terms of top line and EBITDA going ahead. With this, I will hand it over to Ramesh for a deeper analysis of our performance. Ramesh?
Yeah, thank you, Vinita. Friends, I welcome you all to our Q1 FY25 earnings call. The highlight of this quarter has been a strong operating performance in all our key segments, both in terms of sales and profitability, which have led us to report a 23% plus EBITDA margins for the quarter. Diving into the numbers, sales for Q1 FY25 came in at Rs. 5,514 crores as compared to 4,742 crores in Q1 last year, a growth of 16% year on year. However, if we exclude the $25 million of NCE income received last year in Q1, then our sales have grown at 22% year on year during the quarter. We have registered robust growth across most of our key geographies. North America has grown at a strong 28% year on year. India business has grown at a healthy 18% year on year, whereas EMEA grew at 26% year on year. Our growth markets grew at 28% year on year, and API business has grown 7% year on year. The US business, during the quarter, the US business recorded sales of $227 million, a growth of 25% year on year and 8% quarter on quarter on a constant currency basis. This growth has been led by new launches, offset by single digit price erosion in base products and additional generic competition in certain products like Suprep. Our strategy is to pivot to more complex products and it's paying off handsomely, and is for the last 8 consecutive quarters of EBITDA improvement in this business. We have a clear strategy to deliver consistent growth in this business going ahead. India region. Coming to India, the India business has grown by almost 18% year on year during the quarter. The prescription business has grown 10.5% year on year, outperforming IPM growth by 1.2x during the quarter. Segments like respiratory, cardiology, GI, and the multivitamins have outperformed IPM growth in their respective segments. The share of in-licensed products in the quarter is at 14% during this quarter, as compared to 15% last year, which also has a positive impact on our profitability. We have launched 28 products in FY24 and plan to launch more than 20 products in FY25. Other businesses. Revenue in our ex-India, ex-US formulations business, which includes EMEA, ROW, and growth markets, have increased 22% year on year to 1,185 crores and now constitutes around 23% of our sales as compared to 21% in the same period last year. Our EMEA region, which constitutes our EU region and South Africa business, registered strong growth at 26% year on year during the quarter. This has been driven by healthy growth in key markets like UK and Germany from Lufobek and Namuscla, amongst others. Growth markets. Our growth markets include APAC and Latin region, and they've grown at 28% year on year during the period. The APAC market grew by 26% year on year during the quarter, led by strong growth in markets like Philippines and Australia. LATAM market grew 28% year on year in this quarter due to strong growth witnessed in Mexico. Speaking about the P&L, other operating income is at 86 crores, which has increased 20% year on year during the quarter. This increase is mainly due to higher PLI and export benefits during the quarter. Gross margins. Coming to the profitability, Q1 FY25 gross margins were at 68.4%, up from 67.8% in Q4 and 63.8% ex-NC income recorded in Q1 last year. This improvement is driven by multiple factors, which includes better product mix, lower sales of in-licensed products, increased volumes, and also cost improvements and efficiencies which we have undertaken over the last several quarters. Barring any unforeseen situations like geopolitical tensions in the Middle East and the like, we feel confident of maintaining our gross margins around these levels going ahead. Employee benefits expenses came in at 971 crores, increasing 15% year on year from 844 crores in Q1 FY24, translating to 17.6% of sales vis-a-vis 18.6% last year. This change is largely attributable to higher costs in terms of business growth as well as increments during this period. Manufacturing other expenses came in at 1,598 crores, which translates to approximately 29% of business as compared to 32.5% of sales in Q1 last year, reflecting a growth of 8.6%. The expense in absolute terms is higher due to legal and professional fees and, of course, higher volumes and the like. There's, of course, been offset by lower R&D figures. R&D is at 350 crores, 6.3% of sales at Q1 FY25, as compared to 426 crores, which was 8.7% of sales in Q4 last year. A full year R&D is expected to be around 1,800 crores. EBITDA. The quarter, as you see, we have made significant improvements across all lines. Our gross margins are higher. There has been increase in operating income, and the higher sales ensured higher operating leverage as well. Consequently, this has resulted in driving the EBITDA margins considerably higher. Excluding Forex and other income, EBITDA was 1,286 crores, an increase by 50% year on year. If we exclude the NCE income we received in Q1 last year, EBITDA is almost double on a comparable basis. Margins for the quarter were higher at 23.3% versus 20.4% in Q4 24 and 14.4% ex-NCE income, which we recorded in Q1 last year. Tax. Insofar as the tax is concerned, our ETR is 18.8% during the quarter. For the full year, we expect ETR to be around 20%. On the balance sheet items, we have been focusing on operating working capital, and there has been tremendous improvement there, as you can see, given the fact that the net operating working days is just about 100, as against 105 days in the previous quarter. On the ESG front, we have successfully committed and joined the science-based target initiatives, which drive our journey towards decarbonization of our value chain. We have achieved a significant milestone from ISO 14001 and ISO 45001 certification across all our Indian manufacturing sites, R&D center, corporate office, etc., acknowledging our commitment to safe and sustainable operations. Our strategic interventions across water recycling, renewable energy, adoption of human rights are progressing as we plan to deliver ambitiously on the ESG goals. With this, we open the floor for discussions.
Thank you very much, sir. We will now begin the question and answer session. Please raise your hands from the participant tab on the screen to ask questions. We will wait for 30 seconds for the queue to assemble. Thank you. So welcome back. We take the first question from Mr. Kunal Damesha. Kunal?
Hi, good evening, and thank you for the opportunity. Congratulations on a great set of numbers. First one on India business, where we have grown at 18% year on year. You said that the RX performance was 10.5%. Right? So is there any institutional business which is baked into this quarter, which was not there in the last year or last year same problem? How should we think about the growth going forward?
Sure. Hi, Kunal. So you're right. It is the institution business that basically explains the difference. From our perspective, the growth in India region is 10.5%, the India region formulation business. But when we add the other business that we sell in India or formulations, it goes to the number that you talked about. The institution business basically went from 15 crores to 121 crore. Some lumpiness in the past. I mean, 15 crores was not representative of the quarterly run rate last year. But I mean, this is it's going to be a good number for the GIP business. So we are going to have good numbers. But I mean, for India region formulations, we'll always call out without this institutional business.
The last full year, what would have been this business contribution?
Yeah. So, you know, it's very fluid because it actually goes, I mean, it's exports coming back to India. So we do report it out. Ramesh is pulling out that number, but, you know, it used to be, the entire business used to be of the nature of, I believe, 700 something crore for the year, but that's domestic as well as export. And it's obviously on a high growth rate at this point.
So last quarter, if you're talking about it, you know, we had about 63 crores of other domestic business and so on. And of course, we also had diagnostics and OTC, which would add another 40, 45 odd crores. So that's for last quarter. And if we talk about the previous year, it was much lower. And that's the diagnostics, OTC, et cetera, was about 35 odd crores. And then domestic, you know, which is essentially the GI business, would be about 15 crores.
Last year maybe was much lower than the normal run rate.
Yes, that's exactly what we are saying. This is at least about 8 times higher this time around.
Thank you on that. And the second question on the US business, it seems we are seeing good performance from the new launches like Mirabegron and doxycycline. So my question is on Mirabegron. Do we see a meaningful ramp up in the coming quarter from here on, including the launch of 50 milligram version? From our side,
yeah, we continue to increase our share on the 25 milligram and evaluate timing of launch of the 50 milligram. There is a upcoming hearing on the 780 patent actually today, so we are monitoring that as well. But we expect to ramp up the product.
And this 780 patent hearing is for the appeal that innovator has done.
I didn't catch the question.
It's the appeal.
Yes.
Yes, it is.
Yes.
Okay. So we are waiting for the result of that appeal and probably would launch 50 milligram and not launching Viperis.
Yeah, we'll evaluate.
Sure. And then the last one from my side. I have more questions for Sean back the queue. I think we have recently also shared that Lucentis phase 3 clinical trial has been successful. And we said it will now file and it will take some time. But if you can help us with, you know, the current market structure, potential competition, when you enter the market, will you be in the first wave of the launches? How should we think about it?
Yeah, so Lucentis is a unique opportunity because it's in the ophthalmic market, and some of the ophthalmic market distributors are our current partners, for the generic business. So we see a good opportunity with Lucentis even as a late player. We believe that we should have the ability to switch share. Of course, you know, how much, what percentage, time will tell the number of competitors. But we feel good about the ranibizumab product for the US.
Sure, man. Thank you and all the best.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, Kunal. We'll take the next question from Neha Manpuria. Neha?
Yeah. Thanks for taking my question. Vinita, could you give us an update on tolvaptan, given the litigation? What's our stance here? How should we think about this product?
Well, it's a very certain launch at this point for us in the first quarter of next fiscal year, with a win on the litigation front as well as a product approval. We are gearing up to get supply together for the launch.
Understood. And what would be your sense on, post the exclusivity period, how the competition could shape up, given, there are other bunch of players who are, I think, where the outcome is, who are also fighting litigation on this. And I think a settlement too.
Yeah, we would expect additional competition, but given that this is a REMS product, a specialty distribution product, the early entrant seemed to hold on to share much longer. So we would expect it not to be a typical oral solid where you see significant erosion after additional competition. We expect to maintain a decent share even after additional competition gets in. But for us, the 180-day exclusive window itself for such a large product is a great opportunity for fiscal year 26.
Understood. And my second question is on, generic Spiriva. If you look at IQVIA data, while not too much, we are seeing a share, coming off a little bit. I know we have guided to like the 35-40% share is what we should be getting to this year. Could you explain the dynamics of that market? Is the PI, I know the innovator tried to cap pricing for the out-of-pocket. Is that impacting our ability to get share? How should we think about share gain from here for Spiriva?
Yeah, so we are seeing share at the 30% level right now,
Okay.
based on the most recent data, which is consistent with what we have seen. Some weeks it's up, some weeks down, but overall, roughly around that 30% level, which has been what we saw with other respiratory generics in the past. But continue to work on avenues to grow that share. I mean, what we have seen after the brand brought in the $35 copay is more business going towards commercial. Because the business is split between commercial and Medicare, Medicaid. And there's actually a pretty good percentage that's Medicare, Medicaid, where we have a low share right now. We have a higher share of a commercial. So that also gives us hope. That we should be able to gain share given the commercial segment of the business, commercial component of the product is going up.
So essentially, the shift to commercial therefore helps us, right? So the share gain
That's
should be
right.
visible in the subsequent quarters.
Yes, we are hopeful that we should be able to grow share in the
Understood. Thank you
quarters
so
ahead.
much. Okay. Thanks so
Thank
much,
you.
Vinita.
Thanks, Neha.
Thank you.
We'll take the next question from Mr. Abdul Qadir. Abdul, are you there? Hello?
Yeah, hi. Am I audible?
Yes, you are.
Yes.
So, hi. Thank you for the opportunity. My first question is with regards to the market share in Albuterol. So there seems to be some softening in a market share on a sequential basis, as well as the share of the complex product. I think it's come down a bit. So could you help me reconcile what's the entire impact and about this market share loss? What do we have on a sequential basis?
Not really. I mean, we're seeing market share very stable at the 20% level. So no real material loss of any customers. It's been a pretty solid contributor to the quarter. So real no real change in market share. I mean, there was additional demand during the flu season in a couple of quarters ago. That would have had some impact on phasing of supply, but the market share has been fairly stable for us. There have been shifts with the other players in the market, but we've seen our customer base and share stay pretty stable until now. I mean, as we go forward, based on what happens with the launch of Amphastar, when Amphastar launches it, because I mean, right now it looks like they are on a hold mode, and we would expect that Teva is going to, file an injunction. We would expect that, given that Teva brought a claim against the, the patent. So we'll definitely see erosion going forward, we think. So to some extent, but overall, our share is fairly stable so far.
Got it. Thanks. And second is on the Mirabegron launch. So for the base erosion and the competition and Suprep, we are largely commenting that the launches had offset that. So I mean, so going ahead, I mean, how do we see the run rate? I know we have a limited exclusivity here, or rather co-exclusivity here, but on a quarterly basis, what's the expectation in terms of the run rate, sales run rate for this particular product?
Yeah, we don't really highlight product-wise sales, but based on what we expect from Mirabegron, given the additional competition, as well as the other products that we are launching, Predfor, Glucagon, others that we have in our plan, and the Albuterol erosion, like what I mentioned, we would expect high single-digit growth over the previous year. Overall.
Got it. And a final one, if I may, which is a bookkeeping one. So we made a provision of close to $9 million. So I mean, where exactly would that be recorded into the P&L? I'm referring to the Glumetza provision.
It's part of other expenses line. So that's one of those items that we flagged off even in our disclosure.
that we paid off about 75 crores for Blumetza.
Sure, got it. Thank you.
Thank you very much, sir, for your question. So the next question is from Bino Pariparimil. Bino?
Hi, good morning and good evening.
Bino, can you just speak out? I mean, you can't.
Yeah, can you hear me now well?
Yes.
Yes, we can hear you.
Okay, thanks.
Yeah.
Vinita, just digging a little deeper in on tolvaptan, which you said you will launch next year. There are two brands of the product, if I understand correctly. So are you going to address both of them or only one?
I mean, as far as our plans have entailed, we are looking at the whole molecule. And when we look at the molecule, the oral solid dosage form that is the primary product for Otsuka, it's $1.5 billion in revenues for the company. So that's the market that we're targeting.
Understood. Second question on Slynd, on which I think you have a tentative approval. I think there was some hearing set for this month, August. When would that be? And if it goes well, is it going to be a near-term launch?
Yeah, so that's end of this month. I think it's the last week of August. We don't know the outcome, what the outcome is going to be, but we are preparing for launch in case we have a win.
Oh, okay. So if it goes well, it can. Okay, if it goes well, it can be an immediate launch, near-term launch.
Yes.
Okay. And one last question. In your opening remarks, you had mentioned two, three products for the year. One I believe was glucagon, another was Doxil generic. What were the other one or two you mentioned?
Ophthalmic, I mentioned Predfort. We just got CGT approval on Predfort last week.
Right.
So we're gearing up to launch that product as soon as we can. We have a couple of other ophthalmic products that we are launching in Q3. So I think Predfort plus the other.
For some of the doctors.
Yeah, he mentioned that. So, but other than injectable doxorubicin as well as glucagon, we should have like three or four ophthalmic products with Predfort being the largest.
Got it. Perfect. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you, Bino. So before we move to the next question, this is a reminder to everyone to raise their hands in the participant tab for more questions, please. We'll take the next question from Krishnendu Saha.
Yeah, hi. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah, just on the Mirabegron, how big is the 550 mg and 25 mg? I suppose last quarter we learned it was $700 million. So how big is the 50 mg?
I think it's a little bit larger than the 25 mg.
I see. Okay, any number?
It's close to a billion.
I see. Thank you. And just on the annual report, when I was reading through the annual report, I saw the US revenues coming up at I think to 67 billion rupees. But when I do the quarter on quarter of the disclosures which we have, or the Q4 number, it is 72 billion rupees. So just trying to understand what is the difference. Am I getting, could you help me out over here? So just trying to understand what were the difference.
Which region are you talking about?
He's a US business.
So in the US business, when you go to your annual report, you quote a number of 67.628 million rupees. And over here is 72.462 billion rupees on the quarterly or the Q4 number when you look at. So there's a difference which is pretty big. So I'm just trying to understand what
I would have included Canada, North America and the like, but you could take it offline, and see what are you talking about?
Yeah. Okay. Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you, Krishnendu. I will take the next question from Saurabh Kapadia.
Yeah, hi. Firstly, on the US market, given the few launch in the second half and tolvaptan in FY 26, how we should look at the US growth in 26?
26 should be a very strong year for us. Being given the current products that we have this year, plus tolvaptan for certain, as well as other injectable products like liraglutide and risperidone consta, we're looking at a pretty solid year in fiscal year 26.
Okay, and secondly, on the margin front, so our long-term guidance or the aspiration is 20 to 25% range. So given this quarter and also next year number of products we are launching, should we expect to reach that margin level by next year?
So from our perspective, I think three or four things to be said. Firstly, this particular quarter, there has been a lower spend on R&D. So if you're going to factor that in, the overall margins could have been a little lower. And we do expect, in fact, the R&D figures to step up in the next 2 to 3 quarters and from next quarter onwards. There's, of course, the one-off of the Glumetza settlement, which has come in also. So you need to factor that in. But we also have adjacencies which are not actually core to us at this stage, which also make losses. So that has to be factored in. So the overall guidance that we have been speaking about is essentially moving towards a core of about 23 to 24% in the medium term, and we'll get there.
So how much percentage point the adjacencies are pulling down in terms of margins currently?
So OTC is still, so we expect to break even now. We also have diagnostics and digital. We also have the API CDMO business, which is in some ways behind the curve. So all of this put together about a percentage, 1.5 to 2 percentage points.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Saurabh. We'll take the next question from Bhavya Sanghvi. Hello. Bhavya, are you there? Okay, so
Hello.
Kunal, you can take it. Hello. Yeah.
Yeah, hi, this is Surya here. Hello.
Hello.
Yeah, we can
Yeah,
hear you.
Go on. Go on.
Yeah, okay. So my first question was on the other businesses, businesses other than US and India. Where we are across board, we are seeing a kind of robust growth number this quarter. Anything that is driving this, and how sustainable the growth momentum there in the all the region, and what is really helping it to achieve this kind of momentum?
Yes, so really, maximizing our portfolio across different regions. The European region, for example, has the benefit of Fostair generic that has continued to grow very nicely with limited competition. They also have one or two additional new products that are launching, so that also will help grow the business further. Other countries, Germany, Australia, have had good new product launches as well. Canada has had Spiriva launch and Etanercept launch, so. And overall, strong performance, commercial execution and maximizing the portfolio.
Okay. So is it that this the other business than the India and North America is likely to gain momentum and hence market share going ahead? That is the kind of expectation or
No, we would
or
so we expect the overall percentage of US and India has remained kind of the same. And we'll be happy if all our regions grow to help grow the company at the double digit level.
Okay. My second point is on the Mirabegron, ma'am. See how, given the kind of a litigation situation, how long this opportunity be, whether one should think about a 180-day kind of a period for this opportunity, or it could be a long-term means a relatively longer opportunity also, given the till the time the outcome of the litigation is pending.
Yeah, so it's very much dependent on the outcome of the litigation as well. It could be that the exclusivity could be longer. Depending on what happens, with the hearing on the 780 patent. It's hard to really predict, but at this point, it looks like the next quarter could still continue to be a two-player market, and then we could see an additional competitor. And then depending on the settlements that the other generics have with the brand, but if you assume the typical brand generic settlement, one would expect additional competition to come in during their, at the end of the 30-month stay, typically, which is really late next year, like September next year. So again, hard to predict, but okay. It could be, extended beyond 6 months. Also.
Okay. Yeah. Just last one point about the biosimilar, if I may. Given the kind of situation or development that we have witnessed in the adalimumab, are you really worried about this investment and the opportunities out of the biosimilar? I mean, what I'm trying to say is that you'd have seen one of the players out of the 7-8 initial launcher of adalimumab have sold the product and all its rights for just $40 million. While the product is a $10 billion and minimum opportunity one would be expecting would be a few $100 million out of the product. And the kind of a spend in the development itself would be $100 million plus or near about $100 million. He's selling the entire opportunity rights and everything for $40 million. So what to understand out of this? And are you really worried about this fact?
You know, one, we are really glad that we didn't have adalimumab, because the number of competitors, the competitive intensity there was really, really high. And also the brand really held on to the product for really long. So you were competing, the biosimilars were competing with the brand. Having said that, Sandoz has now had some success in that marketplace. So, right. It is... The biosimilars have really turned out to be a difficult marketplace, given the high investment, not only the development, but access to market. Depending on what the brands end up doing, the difficulty in gaining share. I mean, for us, ranibizumab is more of a niche opportunity. It is a smaller product. It's not the $10 billion product that attracts everybody. And there are other competitors, but not in the same competitive intensity as, Humira. And like I said, that, it's a more streamlined market access that we are expecting here. So we're not expecting to make significant commercial investment to access the marketplace. We have partnerships with companies in place to really get access and gain share. So we're not really, concerned about the investment that we've made. The investment also, relatively speaking, in ranibizumab has been smaller than products like even at Enbrel, Etanercept for us, or what adalimumab would have cost all the biosimilar companies.
Sure, man. Yeah. Thank you. Wish you all the best.
Thank you.
Thanks, Surya. Can we please reiterate our request to all the participants to raise their hands from the participant tab for more questions? We'll wait for 15, 20 seconds for the queue to assemble. Kindly be online. Thank you. Okay, welcome back. Can we have the next question from Srikanth?
Hi, good afternoon.
Hi.
I have three questions. Firstly, if you can talk about the base price erosion that we have currently.
Yeah, it's a mid-single digit price erosion.
Okay, and is there any change? Because even I think other companies are also talking about benign price erosion. So has any change happened in the industry structure?
There really has, with all of the challenges one saw with price erosions over the last couple of years, a number of companies got out of products that didn't make sense. We got out of multiple products that didn't make sense. And all of that had led to drug shortages. So if you look at drug shortages in the US, they're at a decade high, which has been on the agenda for the policymakers, folks on the Hill. So our customers have been very concerned as well about product exits and the economic viability of the generic business for the generic manufacturers. And as a result, we have seen a more rational generic market, so a better situation for our inline business and to really sustain the generic companies. I mean, there's been a lot of scrutiny on GPOs. There's scrutiny on PBMs, really addressing the drug shortages, which is very positive for our industry.
Understood. And with the erosion quite benign right now, is it possible to call out some range of US margins now that you are talking about eight quarters of sequential improvement in the EBITDA? So is it possible to call out the margins?
So we don't really break out region-wise margins, but it's fair to say at this point, it's above the company average.
Okay, that helps. Second question is on the Mexico and Philippines market. We have seen very strong growth for this quarter. So if you can call out the underlying reason and how should we see the remainder year for these businesses?
So Mexico was actually had a challenge last year with the facility being shut for a long period of time due to its GMP status, and that cleared October last year. So and after that, the business has started to ramp up. So you see the impact of the ramp up of the business back into the ophthalmic market and the private segment. So one will continue to see that growth year over year for Mexico for the rest of the fiscal year.
Yeah, Philippines looks good sequentially, of course, because Q4 is light. But year on year, again, I mean, it's a portfolio. It's new products. It's commercial excellence. We're doing well across the board in the Philippines.
Okay, and that will be branded generic business in Philippines, right?
Yes, it is. I mean, when we report the tender part in that business as well.
Yes.
Yeah, we do, but this was primarily the branded generic business.
Okay, and the outlook here will be continuing of the similar growth for the rest of the year?
I mean, double-digit growth is the plan. Yeah.
Okay. And lastly, on the biosimilar business, we had filed pegfilgrastim, I think, a couple of years back. And we also have Enbrel biosimilar. So is it possible to update us about the if you are facing any challenge there? And secondly, our Pune Biotech Park had received, I think, compliance issues some time back. So what is the progress on that part? Thank you.
So on pegfilgrastim, yes, we had the filing. It's been processed, moving ahead. Yes, we had the observations at the biotech facility, basis which we've completed the remediation and resubmitted the application as is necessary for this. I think we're optimistic of clearing the facility from a compliance perspective, after which we would expect the pegfilgrastim approval. On etanercept, as you know, we are commercial in a bunch of markets, Europe, Japan, and the like, and it moves along. I think we're steadily gaining share in the product. It's still not that large.
Yeah. And the US is a little bit away. It's 29 when the patent goes off. But as you saw, we just launched in Canada. We'll launch hopefully soon in Australia. So we continue to expand into other markets with etanercept.
Thank you.
Thanks, Srikanth. We'll take the next question from Tushar.
Yeah, thanks for the opportunity. Congrats on good set of numbers. Just on your guidance for US sales growth, so let's say, for example, the litigation outcome, which is expected today, so clearly that would be over and above what you're guiding for, right?
Yes, we haven't counted that as of yet. Hopefully, we have more upside.
That's great. Secondly, with respect to prednisolone, so is this completely manufactured in-house or we have API outsourced?
The API outsourced.
That is manufactured at Pithampur.
So subsequently, the level of profitability would be relatively, while it is still a CGT product, how to think about the profitability in this?
It's a very good margin, decent margin product. I mean, it will all depend on the number of competitors and if anyone else gets approval before we launch. We are hoping we can get it to market before anyone else gets approved. And you know, if we can, then it's a very nice $200 million brand in which we could have, you know, enjoy a 6-month exclusivity.
Understood. And apart from, let's say, loss of exclusivity for, say, 25 mg mirabegron, any other potential risk on the already launched product portfolio per se, which is, you know, sort of pulling your guidance at, let's say, high single digit growth for US business?
Yeah, we are assuming that we'll have some erosion in albuterol when Amphastar launches.
Understood. And lastly, on the API sales, this quarter, there has been a significant jump. So there also, is there anything to call out, or this is going to be a sustainable rate, given that at the industry level, the price erosion continues even, you know, over last, let's say, 3 to 5 months as well.
Yeah, so I think there's some lumpiness which has led to the additional sales, but we are on a growth path. I think we went in, you know, last 3, 4 years into a slump as far as API is concerned, COVID and after, but it's coming back. Obviously, this is not representative growth rate. I think, you know, we'll have lower growth rate than this, but it's definitely on the uptick as far as API is concerned.
Pen-G's prices until recently were as low as 14, but it's now coming back again. So let's see.
Okay, fair enough. And on India business, if you could just break the RX growth into price volume new launches for us.
Yeah, sure. So the volume growth was 5%, price was 3.5%, and 2.1% was new introductions.
So the volume growth is quite much, much higher compared to, let's say, the industry growth of, you know, the industry is hardly struggling at, say, 0.91%. So anything you want to, you know, call out here?
I mean, it's been good performance. I don't think we've grown so well in the past on the volume front, you're right. But I mean, it's good performance and primarily driven by the non-in-license portfolio, the in-house portfolio.
Understood. So MR addition for this year on the number which is disclosed in the presentation.
So I think we're at a good number on representatives now. Now I think it'll be the programmatic few hundred representatives that we add each year. This is new divisions and areas. I think there is a plan to add a couple of hundred this year.
Great, sir. Thank you. Thanks for asking questions.
Thank you.
Thanks, Tushar. We'll take the next question from Shyam Srinivas.
Hi, good evening, and thank you for taking my question. Just the first one on your balance sheet, you know, we are now showing net cash, right? So we've not been in this position for some time, I believe. So just what are the thoughts in terms of deployment of capital going ahead?
So we are happy about the fact that, you know, we are without debt at this stage, but it's not as though, you know, we believe that we should be a debt-free company because, you know, we obviously believe in acquisitions. We've always been acquisitive, and if the proposition really is compelling enough, we would look at that. And I also believe from a return on equity perspective, trading on equity is possible only if you have some debt. But of course, we have guardrails in terms of the total quantum of debt that we would have, which we believe that it should be about twice that of EBITDA. But that doesn't necessarily mean that I need to borrow only for, you know, unless there's a proposition which is compelling.
Understood, Ramesh. So what would be the areas that we would, since we would likely to acquire, you saying, what are the areas that are priority for us in terms of either therapy or geography areas that we would be looking at?
We've always been pretty bullish about India. So if we do come across things that are compelling, we could look at that. It could be small bolt-on in terms of generics and other parts also. But we have also been very explicit about our ambitions on the specialty front.
Understood. Thank you. And last one, just a clarification, Ramesh, on your comments on the gross margins, right? So you said the reasons for the gross margin improvement, if you could elaborate again, and you said that this is the new sustainable 64%, is it?
No. So essentially about 68%. The reason is, of course, it's the sales mix, the kind of products that you've been bringing to the market. This time around, there has, of course, been the inventory impact also. So as you could see, there is a lowering of overall inventory in terms of consumption itself. So from that perspective, that has cost a blip of about 0.9%. So if you had add that, the margins could have been a little higher. But for sure, I think we could sustain that this, given the kind of product launches that you're kind of planning for the future.
Understood. Yeah. Thank you and all the best.
Yeah. Thanks, Shyam. We'll take the next question from Damayanti.
Hi, thank you for the opportunity. I have a question on your complex injectable pipeline. So Vinita mentioned liraglutide could be a launch, possible launch next fiscal year. So just want to have some update on your pipeline and specifically on these peptide GLP sort of products.
Yeah, so liraglutide, both Victoza and Saxenda, we have filed and based on the CRL, as I mentioned, we expect them to get launched next year. Glucagon is the one that we would expect later this fiscal year, based on where we are with the filing with the agency. Doxil, smaller opportunity, but launching in the next couple of weeks. So those are the near-term injectable launches. And then next fiscal year, hopefully with, subject to, of course, FDA approval, we should have Risperdal Consta launched as well. We just recently had an inspection for our Nanomi site, and that was successful. So we hope next year we're able to launch that product as well.
Okay, great. And also, if you can update on the Dulera filing, that's also one of the opportunity which we were looking at.
Yes, so Dulera, we have a pending CRL that our team is working upon. It is taking a little bit longer to address the agency's queries, but we expect in this fiscal year to be able to respond. And potentially that could be a product also that is available to launch next fiscal year or fiscal year 27.
Okay. Coming back on this complex injectable, so you will be doing in-house manufacturing for all the products, even liraglutide, et cetera, from your Nanomi facility, or you have some partnership there?
We have CMOs. I mean, for example, on Doxil, we have a CMO. A partner rather, and then in Risperdal Consta, we have a CMO where we do our manufacturing in Europe.
And other complex injectables would also happen from a Nagpur
facility. Yeah. Glucagon and liraglutide would be from the Nagpur site.
Okay, that's helpful. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks, Amiti. We'll take the next question from Amey Chalke. Amey?
Hello. Thank you for taking my question. Most of our questions are answered. Just one on the inhaler pipeline. Where are we in terms of filing for Ellipta Respidamat and also the complex injectable Ambisome? Thank you so much.
Yeah. So we are, again, pretty far along in development with Respimat as well as Ellipta. I mean, both platform products, the first products. We plan to take exhibit batches this fiscal year. So hopefully, next fiscal year, early fiscal year 26, be able to file to the FDA.
So, and Ambisome? Yeah.
Yeah, Ambisome, actually, we dropped it. Based on the competitive intensity there, the number of folks that got approved, we didn't think it was worth investing into the development of the product.
Sure. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Amay. So we'll take one last question from Mr. Kunal Dhamesian.
We have 5 minutes more, so we can take others if they're there. Otherwise, we'll...
Okay, sir. Sure. Kunal, you can go ahead with the question.
Sure. Thank you for the opportunity again. So one for Vinita ma'am. Since we have seen a lot of shortages in the US, and there has been improvement in price erosion, but in terms of business structure, have you seen any improvement, let's say, longer term contracts, better working capital, receivable days, anything on the business front which would have structurally improved due to these shortages?
I mean, structurally for us, there have been a lot of improvements based on what the team has been working upon, from a working capital standpoint, from, managing the gross to net lines, the failure to supply penalties, the back orders, the returns, all of that management, has improved significantly for us over the last couple of quarters, based on which, one sees really limited, leakage from a gross to net standpoint. But structurally from a, overall market perspective, there hasn't been a material change. There have been some new players that have entered, like Mark Cuban. Amazon is getting into, has gotten into generics in the last couple of quarters. But one hasn't seen a material shift from a channel perspective. But overall, the market dynamics have been more stable, just led by all of the pressures that led to a number of drug shortages, the exits in the marketplace. We are hopeful that this continues for the industry.
And the second one, it's a clarity. So the CGT on Fredport, is it linked to the fact that anyone else shouldn't get approval before we launch the product? Is it the condition?
Yeah, so CGT products, until you launch, if there are others that can get approved, they can also get a CGT. So we have our CGT status with the product. We'll have a 6-month exclusivity. And of course, we can forfeit it if we don't launch it at a certain time, 75 days after. But of course, we intend to launch as soon as we can. But if there are others that get approved within, before our approval, they will also enjoy 6-month exclusivity. So then it will be a shared exclusivity.
But we have already got approval.
Yes, we did.
So anyone gets approval before our launch, then they get shared exclusivity. Is that correct to understand?
Yes, that's how we're looking at it.
Sure. So then the launch should be imminent. We would be just building inventory. Right?
Yes, we're building inventory right now. Yeah.
And one point, Vinita, on the India business, how are we planning to offset the impact from a patent expiry next year within the licensed business?
Yes, so I think that's the challenge with the diabetes portfolio. So obviously, we've worked through most of the loss of exclusivities. We have one coming up at the end of Q4. We believe that we will continue to grow diabetes in this through the financial year. So right now it's some 3-odd% growth. It'll actually pick up, but we will have the challenge in Q4. But once we have that in Q4, we're done. I mean, from that perspective, going forward, we should be able to continue growing the diabetes portfolio.
And would we be retaining the trademarks that we have created after the end of?
Sorry, I couldn't make
would
it.
Would we be retaining the trademarks that from the brand?
That would be.
We make a bet for it.
Yeah. Hopefully we'll know soon.
Okay.
But as a percentage of our sales, it's actually been steadily coming down. IL was about 16-17% some time ago. Last quarter's about 10th has gone up a little this time around. But in the general sense, the overall salience has been coming down over time.
Because the other molecule in the same category has gone generic. Is that the correct way to understand?
It basically we lose, it lasts for a particular period of time for the contract, and after that we lose exclusivity.
Mm.
And if we do make a bid for it and if we do buy it, then we continue with it. But it's not in licensing, that it's basically an acquisition from our perspective.
And then once we do that, do we have plans to manufacture it in-house? I assume currently we will be importing the product from the innovator.
That's the intention. You know, so we, for example, we always try to do that, you know, so we either through a B2B arrangement or in our own factories.
So then the EBITDA impact would be minimal, right? Even if we lose some market share, but if we are able
to... Yeah, I think typically market share comes down, obviously the pricing comes down, but the margin profile improves substantially. So what we see is, I mean, in the first year you do a little lesser, but in 2 or 3 years you get back to, you know, higher than original profitability.
The volume surge because there's a reduction in price now.
Sure, sir. Thank you and all the best.
Thank you.
Thanks, Kunal. We'll take one more question from Harith Ahmed.
Okay.
Harith, are you there?
I'm audible.
Yeah, you are.
Yeah. So just a couple of questions. If I heard correctly, you shared a guidance of around 1800 crores of R&D spends for FY25. So that's quite an increase over FY24. Just trying to understand which are the areas that you're spending incrementally.
And so majority of the focus on the R&D front is on complex generics. So the largest increase is on the respiratory products, in particular the Respimat and the Ellipta platforms. That also Dulera, additional work that we are doing to respond to the CRL, followed by injectables. So I'd say it's a 60% investment around complex generics and inhalation and injectables, and then some percentage in biosimilars, and the rest is oral solids.
Okay, and the US margins, which you said is currently above company level margins, that's post R&D. Is that understanding correct?
That's right. That's right.
Yeah.
Okay, and last one, on the long-acting injectables front, after Risperdal Consta, are we close to filing or are we in late stage of development on any of the other candidates there?
No, I think, Risperdal Consta was the primary one that we were interested in. There are other long-acting injectables that we are pursuing, but more on a 505B2 platform that are early stage, I would say. I mean, we'll look forward to the Risperdal Consta approval and launch while we progress the pipeline of the 505B2s.
And with your permission, just a quick one on liraglutide. You said that's one of the launches that you're expecting for FY26. So how should we think about the competitive dynamics there? Do you expect to be among the first few players to launch, or are you expecting a bunch of players to launch around market formation?
It's hard to predict because it's a really difficult product to make and get approved for, from our current experience. So we would expect that, it would probably be a staggered launch with the players as opposed to, everybody launching around the same time and, hopefully make for a better market because of the fact that, when you have a staggered launch, it's always more rational than everyone launching at the same time.
Got it. Thanks for taking my question.
Okay.
Thanks, thanks, Harith, and to all the participants. I now hand the conference over to the management for closing comments.
Thank you, everyone. Thank you for your questions. Hopefully, we've been able to respond to all the questions you had on your mind. Obviously, our team is available to address any of the questions that you have. As we've shared, we are very excited about the start to this fiscal year and based on the momentum that we have across our all our regions, as well as the new product pipeline. We look forward to continue to grow on a more profitable basis. So thank you again and look forward to talking to you soon.
Thanks, ma'am. And that concludes our session. On behalf of Lupin Limited, we thank you for joining us and you may now exit the webinar. Thank you.